Hello, my name is Will Spencer, and you're listening to the Renaissance of Men podcast, a place for extended, in-depth discussions about the rebirth of masculinity happening around the world today. This past week, I hosted a podcast booth at ReformCon in Mesa, Arizona, a two-day conference put on by Apologia Church about reclaiming culture for Christ. I recorded five sit-down interviews with Pastor David Reese, Attorney Davis Yontz, Pastor Toby Sumter, Andrew Sonkranz and Jeremiah Roberts from Cultish, and the renowned apologist and headline speaker, Dr. Joe Boot. This is episode one of a three-part series featuring those interviews, and in this episode, I interview Pastor David Reese and Davis Yontz back-to-back.
This is a time of transformation. As old ways fall, men are called to rise, to heal our lives, grow strong, and transcend our limitations. In tribes around the world, drawing on the best of masculinity from all of time, a new day is beginning. This is the Renaissance of Men. You are the Renaissance.
Men, it's time to stand up and be counted. I don't know how to say it any plainer than that. I'm the new guy in this Christian town, but it seems to me that my predecessors have been content to have their faith be a private affair, expressed around the dinner table and at church on Sunday. Meanwhile, American culture burned. Now we're all covered in ashes, while the wall of flame approaches, as Pastor James White might say, our bloodstreams and our offspring. They say there's no zealot like a convert, and that saying usually has a note of derision to it, as in, just wait, he'll get over it. But it seems to me that if there's any religion that shouldn't be true for, it's Christianity. What is there to get over? I have peace with God after 30 years of searching. I've found the answer to every single one of my spiritual questions, and there were many, including some I didn't even think to ask. I have community and a faith to be a part of that extends a bit beyond the 1960s. I'm under no illusions about the weakness of men or women, or institutions for that matter. I don't care about the players on the court. I care about the rules of the game that reveal its true beauty. Far greater men than me have marveled at the majesty of Christianity until their dying day. I'm thinking of C.S. Lewis, Tolkien, Chesterton, Spurgeon, and many others. They looked at the same thing you and I see, and it was a source of endless wonder for them. From an abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. So their mouths and their back catalogs show their abundance. The question then is not why am I so passionate, it's why aren't you? Why do I know New Age converts and former lifelong sinners more on fire for God than those nurtured in the church? You might say familiarity breeds contempt, but if you have contempt for Christianity, I'm pretty sure you're doing it wrong. So I can speculate as to reasons why Christians are sitting on their hands, and maybe someday I will, when I can find a kind way to say it. But the bottom line is this: war isn't coming, war is here. And nothing in my podcast is ever meant to be theoretical. It's not enough to listen to the show and feel like you've gotten your weekly dose of masculinity by osmosis. Nothing you listen to, read, or consume matters unless you put it into practice in your life. And if 10 years ago you might have been able to say that's optional, today I know you know, men, that's not the case. Don't just let that knowledge challenge you, let it convict you. Which brings me to this episode and the next two to follow. I hosted a podcast booth at ReformCon, a theological and cultural conference here in Arizona, put on by my church, Apologia. I set up some comfortable chairs and microphones and a bottle of bourbon for bait, and I attracted some of the convention's best speakers and guests. Because the entire point of the conference is that it's not enough to be adept theologically. If we don't apply that theological rigor to the culture and institutions that surround us, we'll end up basically right where we are today, covered in ashes with an uncomfortable heat approaching on all sides. Finally, at the last, the men of the West are rallying to defy the approaching armies. The battle is at the walls of the citadel. It looks like drag queens dressed as offensive caricatures of women, flouting their male genitalia at children. It looks like a heart attack in a needle, brandished by bloated and withering bureaucrats. It looks like inflated currency and the threat of nuclear war made by a senile fool. It looks like gluttony, lust, and vanity presented as pop music, and wrath, greed, and envy masquerading as entertainment. And most of all, it looks like pride, which, as we all know, goeth before the fall. So, are you ready to humble yourself and serve God? Are you ready to die to yourself? Die to your need for fame and fortune, status, and a seat at the cool kids' table? Are you ready to be hated for the truth, crucified in the court of public opinion for it? Are you willing to walk into your office building, school board meeting, or ballot booth and start a riot with the truth, like Paul did in the synagogues? Because that is the gospel call. It's a call for warriors, which isn't everybody, but it might be you. And it's definitely my guests in this episode. First up is David Rees. He's a husband, father of six, and the pastor of Reformed Puritan Church here in Phoenix, Arizona, just blocks from where I grew up. And he's also the CEO of Armored Republic, a made in the USA manufacturer of body armor and ballistic armor solutions. I'd seen advertisements for their new A3 product on Cross Politics' YouTube channel, and the campaign caught my attention as containing something that I, as a casual firearms enthusiast, should pay attention to. David and I discussed his new A3 product, the challenges and blessings of running a Christian business with non-believer employees, how Christian businesses and small towns aren't by default utopia, and the duty we all have to obey God and resist tyranny. After David Rees, I interview Davis Yontz, a criminal defense attorney and reservist supporting U.S. military members in seeking religious exemptions from vaccine mandates. He's appeared on Tucker Carlson to discuss the current plight of Christian service members in all five branches, plus federal law enforcement, facing what appears to be a purge. In our interview, we discussed his work with his organization Stand With Warriors, how the COVID vaccine has been treated differently by the military than any other vaccine before it, the tyranny of the state, the overreach currently being conducted by the executive branch, and the need for strong men inside and outside the military to stand up to all of it. And I do have to compliment him on his beard. Before we begin, I just want to take a moment to thank everyone at Apologia Church for putting on such an outstanding event, including Christine Schwann, who went out of her way to help me work through some vital logistical details. Like so many other things, I couldn't have done it without her. The next two episodes of this series will be released in the coming days. I hope you enjoy and share all five exclusive interviews with a friend. So it gives me great pleasure to introduce my three-part ReformCon interview series and episode one featuring Pastor David Rees and attorney Davis Yontz. David Rees, thanks so much for sitting down with the Renaissance of Men podcast.
Thanks for having me. It's an honor.
So I've been following what you do with AR-500 and the new body armor you just released. And I have some friends that are really into the firearms world. And I've asked them about body armor in the past, and I don't know too much about it. But I want you to tell me what it is that your body armor does in this new thing that you're doing, because I've been seeing it all over Cross Politics. So help educate me on this subject.
Sure. So we invented an acronym to try to make it easier to memorize like the types of armor.
Yeah, Armored Republic is your company. Yeah,
that's right. Armor, yeah. So Armored Republic, we invented an acronym to make it easier. So SPAC, you know, that's obviously, we've had the famous thing with all the investment vehicles called SPACs, yeah, for stocks, right? But so we have SPAC stands for soft armor, polyethylene armor, alloy armor, and ceramics, so SPAC.
Okay.
So those are the different types. So those are kind of the common thing. So they all have different strengths and weaknesses. Soft armor is good for pistols. It's really light. It's flexible. You look at polyethylene, it's light as well, and it can stop rifle rounds. But the main American infantryman round, it's called the SS-109. It's a green tip. Have you ever seen it? It's the famous green tip. That goes right through that, and so that's a problem with the polyethylene stuff. So you get to alloy and to ceramic stuff, and those are the ones that are really good at stopping a wide variety of things. And with alloy or steel, people like to point out the problem of it's really good at stopping penetration, which is the first concern. It's really good at reducing kind of the concussive power, back face deformation, but it creates fragmentation because the rounds just shatter on it.
Yep.
And so so that's the concern that people have for alloy. And I think that's the least concerning of the three types of danger. We manufacture all four, by the way.
So
I'm not. We make more money on anything except for alloy. Just alloy is literally the lowest margin of all of the three.
Sure.
but or of the four. But But it's the cheapest one typically for being able to have kind of a rifle protection. We developed a thing called FragLock, which is a coating that helps to capture fragmentation. So there's a neat video that has a kind of, it shows that kind of how that captures. So then there's ceramic, which can stop like armor piercing rounds.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'll have what's called level 4. And the issue is it can't take as many bullets. And so kind of go, okay, it's really good. It's typically more expensive and all that. So you have these kind of ups and downs. So we invented one, we call it the A3, so Alloy 3.
Mm-hmm.
And what it does is it mixes the benefits of the P category, that polyethylene, that really light stuff, and alloy, steel.
Mm-hmm.
And so it has a very thin layer of steel alloy on the front that is extremely high hardness. So it's meant to be really brittle, so it kind of makes a plug. It almost like when a round hits it, it pushes it through kind of like a mushroom head. Mm-hmm. It just increases the surface area. It makes it so that when it gets into that backer, the polyethylene backer, it's caught like a catcher's mitt. You know, you're increasing the surface area to reduce the basically the pressure on any square inch or whatever measurement. So that's the idea there. So the A3 is innovative because of the way we've developed steel to do that. So it kind of has, with ceramic, it like fractures. And that's one of the things, like you hit it, it fractures. And that's how this energy from a bullet disperses, just through that fracturing process. And we've been able to get kind of the benefits of ceramic. But what we've been able to do is to make it so that with ceramic, when you hit, it fractures and it compromises a large area. It's like a couple inches out or whatever. You're going to have a second round, it would go right through. So with the steel, it's a really small area that's affected by this kind of mushroom heading that occurs.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can do closer shots together than you could with a ceramic typically. So one of the neat innovations about it. So I know that's a lot of
Great
detail there, but hopefully that helps.
No, that's actually really important for me to know, because this is all new for me, but understanding how the pieces fit together to produce the product, it's like, I can kind of picture it in my mind of what the advantage of it might be, because I'm recently new into firearms, but I know this is one of the areas I need to skill up in. And so it's like, why not talk to the guy who knows the most about it?
Real quick, one thing I want to say is there's different types of body armor that are good for different missions. So think about firearms. Like, when you're going around your ordinary day, you carry a pistol concealment, right? If you knew you were going to get into a gunfight, like you'd bring a rifle, right? When you're going
to
get in a gunfight.
Bring a pistol to a rifle fight.
Right. So it's kind of like, if you're just going about your day and you want to have armor on you, get soft armor. 95% of gun crimes are committed with pistols. Right. So if you just want to have something, like get an insert in a bag. That's the best thing to have as a regular carry thing, and it's soft armor. But if you want something that's there to resist tyranny, to be able to, call to assemble if the governor calls the militia, or your sheriff says, I'm looking for deputization to stop this, this issue. Like, okay, great. You want that stuff for that. The same reason you have an AR-15 is the reason you have body armor.
Right.
And so one last thing about the A3 is just that it's thin. It's cheap compared to other things that have its stopping power and its weight. It's light. And it also can take a lot of hits. And it takes, it's a 3+, so it can stop, 6 shots of 308 and better, several things. So there's a lot of things there. It's a really great value plate. To find plates that perform at a similar level, you're going to look for $800, $1,200 plates, and it's for sale for $399. So I think it's an excellent value, and our goal is always to be disruptors, and we go after the consumer market rather than the government, because we're focused on the cost concerned consumer. And the other thing is, we want to get body armor out as a tool of liberty to people, because we think that it gets backbone for people. When you have the gear and the training and the right mindset, like, you're ready to say no to tyrants.
Yes.
Anyways.
No, please say more about that, because the next question I wanted to ask you is about the philosophy behind what you do at Armored Republic, and also being a Christian-owned, Christian-run business. And I think these things are really important as people begin to look for ways out of, corporate life, look for ways out of secular life, and realizing that things are going not in a bad direction, but like a worse direction now. And so you're offering, a philosophy of workplace and business and product that kind of puts pieces together in a really important way.
Thank you. Yeah. So I think the idea of having a Christian business, no matter what you're doing, you're seeking to advance liberty in a certain sense as a Christian. What I mean by that is, we are called, liberty is ultimately the ability to do what's right, or the right to do righteousness, so to speak. Right. And so we're called to glorious liberty as the sons of God. And so, as adopted sons of God, the application of his law in every sphere of life, in business, in the state, in the church, you know, as an individual examining your own decisions and as you're raising kids and leading your wife, those kinds of things. You're looking at how do we apply the law of God there. And as you do what God commands, you are more free. There are chains and shackles and deadness that are being shedded as you're growing in that. And so the philosophy of liberty there is that. Now, our particular product, yes, body armor is very specifically a tool to resist tyrants and to resist criminals who are essentially petty tyrants trying to take your stuff or your life, right? So it is a tool for, in a more narrow sense of something, to resist oppression when somebody's actually trying to coerce you.
Right.
And so I love that. I'm honored to have that. And it's also wonderful being able to have Christian employees. And we have other people who work for the company who are not Christian, and they very well know. We tell them, this is a Christian company. We're going to apply the law of God, that kind of stuff. And so, they know what they're getting into, and we're very open about it. And that helps to avoid a lot of the, fights and difficulties that could happen there. So
right. Yeah. Well, how does that work for them? Like, obviously they know, do they just brush it off? Do you do prayer meetings? Do they not attend? Like, what does it actually look like in everyday life for a non-Christian employee there?
Yeah.
So what does it look like for Christian employees too, for that matter?
Right. So basically I'm going, there are company values that are rooted in the Ten Commandments. I explain them from the Ten Commandments, but I'm going to pull them out and make applications down. Mm-hmm. I use the Westminster Larger Catechism, which is an explanation of the Ten Commandments, to explain that. Particularly the Fifth Commandment is really great. You go, look, here's the duties of somebody who's in a superior position of authority. Here's the duties of somebody under authority. Here's the duties of a peer, right? Mm-hmm. And that's really helpful for getting people to be like, okay, this is like what you think is righteous behavior at those levels. And some of the things it mentions are things like praying for each other and stuff like that, which you go, okay, I'm not going to force you to pray, but I am telling you it's a duty and that, you have to deal with God yourself. And so the ability to do that kind of stuff and to then just kind of say, okay, fine. So you don't think that the word of God is true. I need you though to realize this is the standard you're going to be held to in terms of, time is a type of property that relates to the commandment to not steal. And so we're going to go, okay, it relates to the eighth commandment. So that kind of thing. So redeem the time, work hard. And I'm not going to try to waste your time. If you're working for me, you're an hour employee, I'm not going to steal from you. I'm going to pay you. You're going to get paid for that time. If I asked you to do something and you weren't on the clock, we're going to get that fixed. You're going to get paid.
Right.
Right. And so you go, this applies both ways. And so I actually have found that I've had a lot of good employees that have been atheists or, rejected Christianity and at the same time have been like, okay, I respect the fact that you're dealing with this. I don't like such and such or whatever. And I go, look, you don't have to pray. But we're going to pray in this meeting. That kind of thing. And that's the kind of way I've dealt with it. It's just, we're going to do these things and this is a required meeting, or this is where we're getting this material. You need to tell people this is the standard to be applied. So those are the kinds of behaviors that I think differentiate. And I think that's not just me trying to dance around some sort of like federal regulation of labor. I think the law of God, we don't want to force people to make confessions they don't believe.
Of course.
And so those are the kinds of things that I think we can be Christians with integrity. And, if somebody sues you over that, praise God, because that would be persecution for righteousness' sake.
Sure.
And it would be an unjust lawsuit.
But right.
Just, do it. We walk around being afraid of all these paper tigers.
Right.
And the reality is just do the right thing, and overwhelmingly the things we worry about never happen.
Right, absolutely. Was it that Mark Twain said, I've imagined several terrible things. Some of that actually happened. There's some quote where he's like, I make up most of my own troubles in my head. I absolutely butchered it, but you get the idea.
Yeah, no, that's great.
So do you find that your non-Christian employees, though, I would imagine that working for a Christian business, they might be uncomfortable with some of like the morality talk or some of the prayer, but they must be happy in the work environment though, because you have people of integrity, people of their word, people who value each other's labor. There wouldn't be much to complain about other than like the prayer makes me uncomfortable, but I like the culture. Does that show up?
Yeah. So I find that, being a body armor company, for example, there's a lot of guys who are like smart young men who are atheists and libertarians.
Right.
And a lot of those guys get drawn to the company. Right?
Sure. Of course.
And they're like, I don't like the Christian thing, but at the same time, it's better than like the woke nonsense. And so they find it like a better alternative.
Yeah.
And so they do enjoy things about it, and they were able to interact with respect. And so I think that the reality is men don't get respect in our culture. And if a man is working hard and doing well, and he comes and works for me, if he disagrees with me philosophically, okay, to, you know, let's go to dinner sometime. I'll talk to you about it. Like, let's debate about it. Let's talk about it, whatever. And then also we can do, you know, in the workplace, these are the standards that are going to be applied. And, you know, you can have some like occasional back and forth chatter as things are going on, just kind of in work or whatever. But you kind of just, you make it known, this is, as for me in my house, we will serve the Lord. You know, and that typically goes well. And people self-select out. If they don't want to be around it, they're not going
to exactly. You don't have to work here.
Right, exactly.
Well, so have you actually had that happen? Someone said, you know what, I want to actually like go to dinner with you and take you up on that. I mean, you're a pastor. So like that's, you know, that's a big deal, right? Like they're going to get the real truth.
Yeah, no, I had a guy who was an executive who we spent like 5 years working together. He was a really smart guy, liberty minded, didn't think Christianity was true. We had probably a dozen or more like long conversations about, you know, about apologetics, about epistemology, about the Bible, about ethics. And you know, he played ball well with that. Like we did, he'd go, well, yeah, I don't think I have an answer to that or whatever. Or he pushed me on something or,
that's cool,
or whatever. And I've had other guys that have had, you know, similar sort of thing where I've had, you know, just you go to a long dinner and you talk about this stuff. And especially if anybody's offended, I just go, okay, so you're offended by this thing. Like, let's go to dinner and let's talk about it. That's typically my offer. If somebody's offended about something, they go, let's go talk about this. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times they'll take me up on it. And then it just kind of resolves. There's a respect that comes out of it. They go, they appreciate the like honest disagreement about it.
Fair.
And then they go, okay, so you're telling me you think I'm wrong. I'm telling you, I think you're wrong. And you're saying, okay, great. Now let's go do good work. You know, that kind of, that's the way it typically ends up going. And so I'm not affirming them in their position.
Of course.
And they're not affirming me. And I think that's, you know, the ability to deal with that disagreement and to then go back to a contractual relationship of doing business, I think is a part of manliness, the ability to just kind
of
take some disagreement. Mm-hmm. So anyways, as a pastor, you know, frankly, a lot of people go, you know, how do you deal with that? I find it makes life easier because everybody's like, oh, well, he's religiously zealous, but, you know, he's a pastor. And it's like, you know, actually, it's funny. I didn't become religiously zealous because I'm a pastor. I'm a pastor because I'm zealous.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, but that's fine. If you want to somehow excuse this for me and make it okay for me to you know, come talk to you about the gospel, that's great.
I'm zealous, but at least I'm a pastor. I see it all the way through. I'm not just your average zealous executive. Like, that's actually do something with it.
Right.
Well, I think this is really important because I know, and I'm talking to a lot of Christians who are thinking about starting businesses, and they don't want to be small businesses forever. They want to hire employees, and they want to, not everyone they hire will be Christian, right?
Right.
And if that's the case, how do you manage that workplace disagreement? How do you create a Christian culture and welcome non-Christians into it? And then also the recognition, like, it's not going to be some sort of holy sainted place, you know, like we still have to turn the lights on. We're not glowing with our halos, you know? So I think this conversation is really important to know how to actually manage it. How many people work for Armored Republic, by the way?
Yeah. So right now we're in the mid 60s.
Oh, wow.
And so we've fluctuated, you know, we go around. A lot of it is, so we have manufacturing labor. And so some of those will be like shifts that based upon like what happens.
Sure.
And so you'll have a significant up and down there, but the group we've got right now is pretty much our core company group. And so we can add on to that if there's a big, you know, contract or something that comes through. Mm-hmm. And so you have skilled positions that you kind of develop and you build this team around, and that allows for a flexible manufacturing operation. But your question, you're asking, how do you kind of help to set that culture? You know, the funny thing is, I find that Christians are the most disappointed with the Christian culture because they're like,
really?
You know, because the process of getting to know me, like most people, is the process of realizing you don't like the person as much as you hoped you would, you know?
Yeah, I can relate to that, sure.
So you say like, we're going to do a Christian company, we're going to do this stuff or whatever. And then you got all the problems still, and there's computer bugs and there's all the things, and this person didn't handle that perfectly, and that person claims to be a Christian, but they were a little bit, you know, terse in that thing, and that email was curt, and, you know, like you get all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
And so it's just like the word Christian, all of a sudden everybody goes, why aren't you perfect? And you go, because I'm a Christian and not Christ.
Yeah.
You know?
And so
I'm not glorified yet.
Yeah.
So that whole thing, you go, okay, there's a problem. There's a problem with the fact that Christianity is when you say you're a Christian, you remind people of God's law. And God's law always shows the imperfections in imperfect things.
Mm-hmm.
And so that keeps you humble. And so the people that I find the hardest time with are not unbelievers. It is evangelical men.
Okay, I can see that because they're seeing the imperfections and it frustrates them.
Yeah,
okay.
And so the progress is not as fast as they want it, and so that. And you know, I'm an ordinary CEO, right? The cash flow problems and whatever else. And oh, I bought too much inventory, and how do I pay for that in time? And you know, whatever else.
Yeah.
And well, that deal, this customer didn't pay in time, so we're not going to have the stuff that I need. And how do I do that? You know, there's just all this stuff. Everybody pretends like businesses are just smooth, like whatever, everything's fine, and we're all, you know, everybody's got, you know, 10 years of reserves of cash on hand and all that. She's like, oh yeah, sure. That's the way everything works. Look, every business owner on the planet scrambles for payroll once or twice a year.
Sure.
You know, because you're going, I tied up money in an inventory thing that I didn't need to do, or a machine, or I put in another investment. And so there's all that kind of stuff. All of those failures make stresses where you have to change stuff in the short term. And it frustrates people. And so if you don't provide stability in the direction, if you don't respond to stuff in a timely manner, if you don't whatever, you create all sorts of frustration and people have to overlook all sorts of faults. So the problem is not Christianity so much as the problem is me. Mm. And the problem is all of the, like, you know, the elements of the curse, right? Genesis 3, you have toil, which leads to, you know, poverty and famine.
Mm-hmm.
You have you have strife, which can lead to, you know, conflict and war, right? Magnified out. And you have, old age, sickness and death, which, you know, kind of magnified out in plague in the book of Revelation, right? Mm-hmm. So you have those. Businesses have all that, right? There's the toil, the fruitless labor, the strife, you know, the conflict. And then there's this kind of the problems of health and ordinary life and everything. And those come in, and the imperfections in the action are the hard part. Now, at the other end, I'll tell you what, having Christian employees who have a deep faith and who appreciate what you're doing, that is nourishment to my soul.
Yeah.
It feeds my faith.
Yeah.
And it blesses me. And so you have both. And it's just, it's always the greatest blessing and greatest cursing is the people who profess.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got, I have a lot of just guys that have been honorable workers who disagree with my profession of faith, who've stuck out for a long time in the company and have just appreciated the fact that they're treated honestly and given respect for their labor.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. So that's.
No, that's great. I mean, obviously we all know what's going on up in Moscow, right?
Like, right.
Okay. And I think it would be really easy to idealize that environment, say, oh, you know what? I'll just move to Moscow and it's all a bunch of, you know, devout Christians and everything will be fine. It's like, no, there's still life, still the curses, and we still have to manage it. And it's that imperfection that can sometimes be so frustrating, but not because of the imperfection itself, but because Christianity isn't going to magically make everything perfect.
Sure.
Right. It's not utopia magically, because we all agree on faith, some significant portion of employees.
Right. And so even though I have an optimistic eschatology. So I believe
we're all post-real friends here.
Great.
Yes. Right.
So I believe there's going to be progress, but it's going to be a grinding out. It's a painful, progressive improving of things across time.
Okay.
And that painful process is a process that involves progress, but there's pain in it. And so I agree with that. And I think, you know, one thing I would say is, you know, Gabriel Rensch and David Shannon from Cross Politic are good friends of mine, and they live in the Moscow area. I've done business with them. And some of it almost does feel, you know, this kind of like utopian thing. It's just like some of the blessings of that kind of interaction, like with those guys, doing business with them. You know, one time I had something happen where I got, I had difficulty with a cash flow issue, and I had something with them. I told them about it, and they were just like, they like refused to take payment on something. I was like, I figured out how to do it. And they were like, they refused so that I could like keep the cash to deal with this other thing.
That's great.
Pay them later. So these guys, you know, the Christian brotherhood, like willingness to do that kind of stuff where you just like mutually seek to bear each other's burdens or whatever, there is a real lightening of load that happens there sometimes. And then other times there's the frustrations and difficulties and whatever else. So anyways, those guys are awesome. And I appreciate working with them, and they do help to lift some of those curses.
Sure. I mean, that's how I saw your new ad campaign for the new product. And I was really impressive. I was really impressed with the production quality. I was really impressed with the clarity of message. And I was already familiar with what you did from the Cross Politic event here and obviously from your participation in the community. But then I saw that, I was like, you know, I'm not in this world. I don't necessarily know what some of that terminology means. Obviously, I recognize the talk about liberty. It's like, there's something in there that I need to know more about. And it piqued my curiosity. And I'm not a firearms guy. Like, I know how to shoot, but I'm not in that world. But as a casual civilian, I suppose you'd say, I don't know what the word is. It's like, there was something there that I need to pay attention to. And that's really difficult to do, right? Because we're all competing for attention everywhere. Mm-hmm. But your ad really caught my eye. And so I think that has the potential to do a lot more, which is why I wanted to have this conversation, because I think you put together so many important pieces at your company, Pastor, values, liberty, you know, an exciting new product and all this stuff. So I was looking forward to the opportunity to talk to you to get to discuss some of these things rather than just admire it from afar.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. It's an honor to be able to talk through that. And I'm glad that it's provided a little bit of encouragement to you and trying to think about how to be bold with the projection of Christianity. It doesn't always have to be, here's the gospel or here's a specific citation of scripture, but a scriptural idea, right, that's a bold distinctive of Christianity. And you know, we talk about resisting tyranny in a lot of our advertising. That comes out of the sense that we think we have a duty to obey God. And sometimes we have campaigns that make that explicit. Like in December, we always do our No King But Christ campaign. Mm-hmm. But other times of the year, it may be less explicit, but it's coming from the same place. Mm-hmm. And so I think having ranges of the levels of explicitness of the Christianity is a part of way of keeping it tasteful, not feeling like you're just like, oh, you know, these guys are trying to sell Jesus. You know, right, this is the body armor that Jesus would wear, and you know, that kind of thing, right? And, you know, I suppose it would depend on what market he's in. But yeah. So anyway, so thank you. I appreciate you having me on the show.
Yeah. Can I, one more question real quick?
Sure thing.
Can we talk about the aesthetics real quick?
Sure.
Because, you know, as the CEO, do you get involved in the marketing and the aesthetics at that level, or do you have... Are you just final approval? Like, to what degree do you participate in the creation of something like that ad campaign?
Yeah, so when I begin, it depends on the person, right? So if I've got like, I have a marketing director, his name's Matt Goodnight. He's very competent. He's an awesome guy. He really, in the beginning of his role, he spent significant time with me talking about details.
Okay.
And he learned quickly and like took notes on stuff and what do I think is problematic or why. And he pushed back on stuff, right? He wasn't like, you say yes man or whatever. He'd like argue with me about things. But he was also trying to figure out, okay, I've been in this industry longer than he has, the kind of stuff, and trying to figure out what I wanted. So most of the time it was, even if he didn't necessarily quite agree, he was trying to learn what I wanted. And then after he figured it out, he could come back and critique it. So the humility there on his part made it so that I was able to give a lot of detail for a short period of time, back out some, see how he's doing, back out further. So it's this process of delegation.
Right.
So now I have to do very little. And I do it in like basically, you know, I'm reviewing stuff after it's completed, or he's talking to me about a big idea if he's planning to go spend, you know, some significant, you know, project to make a new video or whatever, and it's got a budget that's significant. You'll have a conversation ahead of time about on a conceptual level. But a lot of the time it's conceptual conversation, he's executing, and he's showing me something at a like relatively later stage in editing, and we're talking about it a little bit and giving some feedback there. And so that's about having good people who are, you know, I talk about character intelligence and diligence. You're looking for character as sort of, you know, we use our 14 values to explain that, which are getting those values drawn from the 10 commandments. Intelligence is about, you know, how much knowledge do you have that's pertinent? The idea of how much do you seek knowledge to keep growing? And then thirdly, how good are you at communicating it to other people? Mm-hmm. Because if you don't teach people stuff, you probably don't know it.
Right.
And if you can't teach it to people, you probably don't know it.
Right.
And if you do know it and you want to serve, you're going to be teaching a lot. And so clarity there, that's the display of that intelligence. And then diligence, energy, but you can be frantic and not get stuff done, and focus, right? So, and you can be focused and be like a turtle, right?
Which,
you know, frankly, you'd prefer kind of a focused guy with low energy than a person who's high energy with no focus.
That's for sure.
If you can get both, way better.
Yeah.
And so that idea, if you see somebody with character, intelligence, and diligence, that person is going to very swiftly take on more responsibility, because they're going to, authority flows to those who take responsibility.
Well, thank you very much. That's a wonderful insight, especially for personnel management. If you can identify those top performers, sometimes it's hard to say what makes a top performer a top performer. Character, diligence, and is it intelligence? Was the
right
other one? Yeah, like those are the characteristics that you look for in any good worker. You know, it's some combination of those, right?
Right.
When you find the person that has all three, like that's the person that you can invest with trust, take on more and more responsibility, not just within workplace, but in society as well.
Right. And so the other thing we say internally is character and diligence are necessary to work here, at least some extent of the diligence.
Sure.
Or you can be a little bit lower energy or whatever. But if you don't, you know, intelligence is necessary to be able to lead. effectively. Right. And so you're going to be limited And so if you learn, if you seek to learn and you get knowledge that you become a subject matter expert and you become good at communicating about it, then yeah, you're showing that intelligence that's fitting to the role mm-hmm. and you're able to lead other people. And mm-hmm. so that's one of the ways we talk about that with people is character intelligence and diligence. Character and diligence are necessary for working here. CID, the intelligence is necessary to lead.
You guys hiring?
So we're looking for salesmen right now. Besides that, I think most of our positions are filled. We have kind of spurts of stuff and
sure.
sometimes we end up with needing to hire a lot of people quickly. Mm-hmm. And so our webpage is a careers page mm-hmm. where there's people available, but in particular, people who we're looking for good salesmen that either you know, they can show a track record of selling or they can also show a track record of having dealt with particularly the industry, the defense industry, which mm-hmm. is a difficult space to kind of get people to talk to you and trust you in.
Oh, I can imagine.
So those are the things, that's the thing right now that we have open.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, David. Where would you like to send people to check out more about you, Armored Republic, or your ministry?
So armoredrepublic.com, if they want to learn more about the products that we sell and more about the company. We have videos on YouTube and stuff there mm-hmm. As well. But also PuritanPHX.com. Mm-hmm. Puritan Reformed Church is where I'm a pastor. And I've got lots of sermons available on there and say lots of things that would make lots of people angry. So if they're looking for a way to get their blood pressure up, you know, that's a place to go.
What's an example real quick of something you say that makes people angry?
Well, let's see. So your audience, let me see. I'm Sabbatarian. And so I think a lot of people who are Reformed and even post-millennial or whatever mm-hmm. necessarily believe in the Sabbath. We practice exclusive psalmody.
Okay.
We baptize babies. So those are things that, you know, if one of those things didn't offend somebody who's listening, move to Phoenix.
This microphone got really hot all of a sudden. All right. Well, cool. Thank you so much,
Wonderful.
David.
I appreciate it.
Cheers. Davis Jones, thanks for sitting down for the Renaissance of Men podcast at ReformCon.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the chance to do it.
So let's talk a little bit about your organization and how you're serving the military and veterans and federal law enforcement also.
Yeah, thank you. We started Stand With Warriors a year ago. It was a phone call and some prayers and then just a meeting of pastors and some political operatives and two lawyers in a room with dozens of Navy SEALs. And from there, an idea was born to fight back legally, politically, and in the media to help military members that were just being crushed. Religious freedom was being ignored in the military. It started from there. So we've been around for a year. We've had some great success in what's been able to happen. And we hope to move forward and move into federal law enforcement. And we really want to equip Christian men that want to take a stand to know how to do it legally so that they're well prepared. And there's a lot of victories that have been won, and we've done a lot of good things. There's also a lot of people that have lost their positions, even here at ReformCon.
I know.
We've seen that. I was talking to the guy, I don't know if you met them, but they run, it's called Reform Sage.
Yes, I saw their table.
Yeah, so they have a website, Reform Sage. He was in federal law enforcement. Reform Sage was a hobby. He actually quit his job. He was going to get fired over the vaccine mandate, and now they've done that full time. So it's a great story. So we want to see not just the military, but we want to see that fight continue. So there's a place for Christian men in the military, because a mandate has been an excuse for a purge. It's been an excuse for a pure purge for Christians.
I'm glad you said that, because that was kind of the sense from looking on the outside. Now, you're still in the military, right?
I am.
You're reserve.
That's right.
Yeah. So from an outside perspective, a civilian perspective, you know, I look at it, I'm like, that seems like a purge is going on. It seems intentional, right? Like if you want them to leave, you would do everything that is being done right now.
Right, because it doesn't make sense. What's happened in the military doesn't make sense from a legal perspective.
Right.
It doesn't make sense from a readiness perspective, right?
So exactly.
We know now COVID. The CDC changed their guidelines in August 11th of 2022. Okay, so they changed their guidelines and they basically said to everybody before school started, treat everybody the same. If you have natural immunity or if you're vaccinated, we're going to treat it the same.
Okay.
Why does that matter? In the military, before this vaccine, I've been in the military for, it'll be 20 years in December. Mm-hmm. I've gotten a lot of vaccines in the military, but for every vaccine, they've always recognized natural immunity as an exemption. If you have natural immunity, that's as good as getting the vaccine.
Okay.
With COVID, they chose to ignore that. Medical exemptions in the military. There are people that have allergies to ingredients in vaccines. They've had an adverse reaction to a vaccine. For every other vaccine prior to the COVID vaccine in the military, they would recognize those exemptions. For the COVID vaccine, you can only get an exemption if you're pregnant, if you're a nursing mother.
Okay.
Or if you have an adverse reaction to the first shot.
What?
Yes. So it doesn't matter. It didn't matter through this whole thing. If you had a known diagnosed allergy to ingredients in the vaccine, mm-hmm. you cannot get an exemption in the military. And there are several military doctors who are being kicked out, and their credentials as physicians were threatened to be pulled away by the military if they granted exemptions, even though they knew there was a significant likelihood this would cause a negative reaction. So why does that matter? Even before the whole idea of putting in a religious accommodation for myself, I had faith-based concerns with this vaccine. And so that was really driving me. But what happened is they're not treating it the same as other vaccines. Why is that happening?
It's really scary.
Right. So then in good faith, we all put in our religious accommodation requests, right? There's a process. We meet with the chaplain. And the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, so you have the Constitution first, but then the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, it applies to the military. Mm-hmm. And it says there has to be a compelling governmental interest and no least restrictive means to accomplish the mission, or you say yes to a religious accommodation. The military says yes to religious accommodations all the time.
Okay.
And in this process, before it even started, the military decided they were not going to honor religious accommodations.
That's insane. This,
right. So that's been, you know, so when you look at all that, you add it up together, you say, why? To what end? Why would you do that? Right. And again, take it a step further. In August, Breitbart covered numbers. They put together a comprehensive study of numbers. In August, there were 264,000 members of the United States military that were not fully vaccinated.
Okay.
At that point, after everyone's been given an order to do it. In other words, there are 264,000 resistors. That's 13% of the active Guard and Reserve military force. You combine it all together. 13% of the military is not getting this vaccine. You're still enforcing it. Up until August, you said CDC guidance is what we're going to follow. And then they didn't, right? So you bring all that together and recruiting numbers are down. Army doesn't meet their recruiting goals this year. So tell me an innocent explanation for why we're doing this if it's not an opportunity to purge Christians and to purge the kind of military leaders and officers that are willing to question unlawful orders.
Right.
That's what gets scary when you start to think of it that way.
Yeah. How do we reverse this? Is it possible to reverse this? Because, you know, I'm looking at what's going on in Ukraine. Like, are they going to call me to send me over there out of America? It's like, and is that, I don't even understand what's going on in terms of its relation to the American public as well. So maybe you can unpack some of that.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. So you have to look at trends, right? You have to look at what is going on. If we have recruiting going down,
exactly.
Right? Recruiting is going down. You're losing, you know, somewhere between 10 and 13% of the force, and you're losing pilots, you're losing Navy SEALs, Coast Guard rescue swimmers, you're losing experienced people. So what have we done? Then we can't accomplish the mission anymore.
Right.
Right. And so there's big picture implications when you start to look at this. So you ask, what can we do? How can we push back? How can we fight that? We have to stay aware politically what's going on, right? And what I mean by that is we need to understand, what is the military doing? How are they paying for things? What's happening with military dollars? You have to pay attention to that. Just as a voter, you have to understand who was willing to stand up and fight back, because Congress can do a lot through continuing resolutions to push back against what's in the military budget.
Right.
Right. So you need to know that your congressmen are doing that. So that's a big part of this. But the other thing is we need to train and equip military officers and federal law enforcement. I see that as the next stage of this. We need to equip people to understand how and when to say no, how and when to stand up. And the difference is, you know, I'll give an example with the Coast Guard. Okay, the Coast Guard has been the worst offender as an organization in trying to deny due process to military members throughout this.
Wow, okay.
But they have not moved forward with mass discharges yet, okay, even though it's coming. They haven't done it yet because they can't. Because there are so many people in the Coast Guard taking a stand that they would go mission incapable in some key mission sets if they do. For example, and there's one of the guys here that just retired as a Coast Guard rescue swimmer. Okay. People don't know what that is. But what a Coast Guard rescue swimmer is, there's the guys that jump out of the helicopter into the water, get on the sinking boat. So we have them stationed on all the coasts in the country, all the big waterways, in 30 minutes, dark and night, storm, whatever, they respond. In the Hurricane Ian, Coast Guard rescue swimmers were responding, right? Okay. President Biden calls one of them to thank him. That that guy that he called, Zach Loesch, is one of the protesters. He's connected to the guys we're helping with Stand With Warriors.
Yeah.
And so the president asked him, well, how can we help you? And he said, you cannot kick me out because of my religious faith. Right.
Excellent.
Like, so I say that to say, with the Coast Guard rescue swimmers, there's a group of between 30 and 50 of those guys. Okay, and that doesn't sound like a lot, but here's the thing. There's only 302 Coast Guard rescue swimmers in the entire Coast Guard, and you can't replace them in less than 18 months. At a minimum, you can't replace them in that.
Training alone.
So Coast Guard can't respond to a hurricane if they kick all those guys out. So that's part of our prayer, is just equipping people to do it right, to do it well, to honor their faith, to be able to share the gospel. As they do that and pushing back, we can do that. And it's the same with anyone. If it's federal law enforcement, even if it's a private company, if you have enough people, you know, you can't make this stand alone, but if you have enough people, if you have 10 people, then you can take a stand and you can push back.
So you're encouraging people from within the military and federal law enforcement to, like, no, take a stand, because you can actually make a difference that way by doing that.
Absolutely. Okay. And build a community. You absolutely have to build a community around you. You have to have a church that's going to support you. And you do have to count the cost. You do have to be ready for that. But if you're educated and you do it well, then you can win. You know, the first experience I had, and I'll be honest, there was a guy named Billy Mosley in the Navy, didn't put in a religious accommodation, just wanted to fight this at the source. This is an unlawful, unconstitutional, illegal vaccine mandate on the military. Yeah. Bold move. Took a stand, knew what it was going to be. And we fully expected, honestly, not to win. Like, we went into it, hey, we're not going to win. God had different plans. We won, right? So three senior Navy officers said, you're right. This is an unlawful order. This is not misconduct. And they stood up at the end of the board and they looked at the JAGs, the Navy's legal representatives, and they said, I need to talk to you because I've been told to enforce this order for my people, and now I have questions.
Oh, wow.
And we walked out of that room. So, you know, his stand matters, you know, and not everybody that's going to a board is winning. We're not winning all of these boards, but... that's an example of how God can work in these situations.
So let's talk a little bit about your story, how you found yourself in this position after 20 years. Like, I bet you didn't expect to end up quite here.
I didn't. God does miraculous things. And really, for me, there were one or two other guys that I know that were still on active duty or in the reserves like I was, that were pushing back on this, that were willing to fight back, but it was only a few of us. And I mean, we sort of went into it thinking, well, they'll grant religious accommodations. They'll have to. And then it got scary, right? Then it got scary. So, I mean, literally, I say you need to build community. That's exactly how I got involved in this fight. I mean, I went to a homeschool convention with my family, met an attorney from Texas called, you know, named Bradley Pierce. He knows Jeff Durbin. He knows, you know, Luke Pearson and these other guys. And this community springs up. And then we're here making a difference. And we're able to be a rallying cry for military. So I think there's a lot more fights coming, a lot more biblical fights coming. But praise God, we've been able to share the gospel and have an impact through it.
What's the response when you talk to people about your mission here at ReformCon? The people just getting their eyes open that the situation is that dire from within the military? Do they know what's going on? What's the response been like?
I mean, part of it is absolute education, and it's why we push so hard to be in the media as often as we can, because for the vast majority of the American public, COVID is over.
Right.
COVID is over. Natural immunity is what it is. We understand what COVID is now. So regardless where you're at in the beginning of this, even in churches, people have forgotten about it. And yet the Department of Defense, all these federal agencies are not backing down. They're not following the science anymore. And so the military is still in this fight. I mean, we're sitting here talking today. There will be junior enlisted members of the military that are kicked out today, that will be discharged today in the Army and the Coast Guard that are not protected. Again, the Coast Guard's slow because they're smaller, but the Army, this is happening every day. And these, you know, not all of these guys have the resources to push back or understand it. Not all of them are entitled to due process.
Sure.
The longer you're in, the more due process you have. But that's the biggest thing, is just being aware that this fight is still going on and why people are doing it, right? Mm-hmm. You know, so some people are scared to get a shot. They're scared of a little jab. No, for most of these guys, it doesn't have anything to do with that, but it's an awareness. And we forget, this isn't the first time the military has done this.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so in 1998, Congress passed a law that specifically prohibited the military from using experimental or emergency use vaccines or medical treatment on military members. 1998, Congress did this. Unless essentially it's a time of war. There's a list of questions that the president has to answer, okay? So what happened is in 2000, they rolled out the anthrax vaccine. They violated federal law, It was an experimental vaccine, and there were bad batches of vaccine that have killed or injured 35,000 military members. So it took 4 years.
This is 2000.
This is 2000.
Oh.
Okay. And so what happened? I mean, it was a clear violation of the law. And in 2004, we actually won in federal courts. An attorney named Dale Saran, who's actually helping some of the military guys now, won in federal courts, got the mandate overturned for military members because the president didn't do that emergency authorization. And we're doing it again now. Mm-hmm. It's the same playbook. It's a constitutional crisis, and it sounds extreme to say that. Military members say, we swear an oath to support and defend the Constitution. This is a constitutional crisis. The executive branch is ignoring the Constitution, ignoring the requirement to just enforce the law. Congress passed a law in 1998 to prevent this, and they're ignoring it. They're choosing to ignore it.
I mean, why? Well, I mean, I know.
Is it greed? Is it political power? Is it to purge Christians? Is it to purge anyone in these positions that's willing to take a stand against the behemoth of bureaucracy, and evil? But listen, I mean, I'm here a reform comment. I believe that the religion of tyranny is humanistic atheism, right? Like that's what it leads to. The tyranny of the state, that's absolutely what it leads to.
Just talking to Toby Sumter about the same
thing.
Right,
yeah. Absolutely. So that's, that's where this is coming from as well. They have to have weak men. You have to have weak men. You have to cripple the strong men. You have to eliminate, sideline, isolate the strong men in order to bring in tyranny and to bring that across. So ultimately it's prayer and it's the Bible is the answer, but we need strong men.
Mm-hmm. And you sense that you're making an impact within the military with the work that you're doing, like people are reaching out like, yes, thank you. Thank God for you.
Absolutely. And again, I can't tell you how many times, especially when we first stood this up, where I would have someone reach out to Stand With Warriors, or they would call me and get in touch with me. And they'd be like, I'm the only guy here that's going to take a stand. I'm the only guy here that's going to take a stand. I'm the only guy here. Like over every day. I mean, sometimes it was 10 calls a day where they're like, I'm the only person in my unit that hasn't caved yet. What do I do? And that, God, I just think miraculously used that. I mean, this was put together with nothing on a shoestring, but Tucker Carlson jumped into the fray and seemed real on this issue for us, and he wanted to do it as soon as he found out Jeff Durbin and others had that connection, and then that rallied so many to the cause. Mm-hmm. And it bought time for guys like libertycouncil.org, First Liberty Institute, Mike Berry's a veteran, Thomas More Society, and other to come in and file these big federal lawsuits that are helping, right? Mm-hmm. So now, as we stand here today, the Navy, the Air Force, and the Marines are protected with an injunction for anyone that filed a religious accommodation request. These courts, these federal courts, and it's gone up to the appellate level in the circuits, the federal circuits, they have said the violations of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act are so clear, the military cannot kick anyone else out that's filed a religious accommodation, can't touch them, can't discipline them anyway, because the violations of the law are so clear. And in order to get an injunction, emergency injunction like they have, the federal judge has already said, and I believe there's a significant chance that you'll win this case on the merits when it goes to trial for these violations. It's really unprecedented.
Wow.
To have three branches of service do that. So we need it for the Coast Guard and Army as well. But it's been a significant, just a wonderful thing to be a part of, to see God moving.
So what are the next steps?
The next steps are absolutely to continue the fight. We need victories in the federal court level for the Army and the Coast Guard. Mm-hmm. And then there's going to be a 2 to 3 year time period where we're trying to help individual military members navigate what this means for their career. Because the question of, can you be in a leadership position? Can you move your family? Are you going to deploy? Are you not going to deploy? What it's going to look like? Is your career going to be so devastated at the end of these 3 years, you're going to have to get out anyway? So there's a lot of individual military personnel actions that we're trying to educate on. And I don't want to stop here. To me, I think God has brought too many things miraculously together. So for Christians in federal law enforcement and the military, I want to see Stand With Warriors grow and take that on so that people are able to take a stand against something that seems simple, like putting your pronouns in your email.
Oh,
right?
Let's talk about that for a second. Yeah,
okay. That's coming.
Yeah.
That's coming.
Oh, what? I know why, but why? I know why.
Right. Well, yeah. It has everything to do with military readiness, right?
Absolutely.
That's why the military, and again, too many people don't understand, the military, if you are transgender and you join the military will pay for all of your hormones, all of your surgeries. The military will use military dollars that are supposed to be going to training, military readiness, to fight wars, to buy new equipment, to buy guns and bullets. And we are paying millions of dollars per person to help them transgender. And then last week, Secretary of Defense said, we are going to pay military members all of their travel, all of their per diem, all of it goes with it, to travel from a state that has put restrictions on abortion, to pay that military member to travel out of state to another state to get an elective abortion. And again, they're using military money, and there's different pots of money in the military, I get it, but there's a finite budget. And the reality is they're using money that should be going to military members. I mean, junior enlisted military members, if you have a family, you're on food stamps. That's how poorly we pay them.
Wow.
Right? And so there's a whole lot of fights that need to happen. There's a whole lot of things, and it always comes subtly. It always comes isolate individuals, make them think they don't have a choice. Oh, well, the boss just put their pronouns in the email. The boss just, you know, we went to this briefing at the United States Air Force Academy. We got a leaked slide. They were training people. This, you know, don't you make sure you respect people's pronouns and all of that. So there's a lot of fights to be had. I'm encouraged because the military and federal law enforcement in particular draw a kind of person that wants to serve, that is willing. Again, it's not everyone, but there's a significant percentage of people that are doing that service for all the right reasons. And so that's prime people to take these kinds of stands and do this. And I'll tell you, like the Navy SEALs that I was in a room with individually, for them, it wasn't even about them. Mm-hmm. It was about taking a stand for the Constitution for all Christians throughout society. It was about the doctors, the nurses, the school teachers, all of those people. They said if the fact that we're Navy SEALs, if the fact that we're in the military and people will listen and we have a platform, then we'll take a stand. Mm-hmm. And we'll do it and pray that it has an impact.
I mean, that makes sense because the SEALs and many of the military sign up to serve, so they're not going to think about themselves. They're going to think about all the people that these other mandates and other situations are burdening across the country, not just their own particular struggles.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. That's who these guys are.
Yeah. Well, where can people go to find out more about you, your organization, find out how to help? Because from the outside civilian perspective, I have so little visibility in this world, but I know it's deeply relevant to me.
Yeah. I mean, the first thing is just prayer and get involved politically. Yeah. Watch, you know, dig in and see what your congressmen, what your senators are doing about the National Defense Authorization Act. Where are they really at on these issues? Okay. Have they taken a stand? That's one thing. And then go to standwithwarriors.org. That's kind of the rallying point for everything. That's where we put information out. So standwithwarriors.org, again, it's a very small nonprofit. Mm-hmm. It's only been around for a year, but we're building that out. We're working on these things, and folks can follow me at Davis Yance on Twitter. I think I just got on Gab. Mm-hmm. I'm getting up to speed there. So do that, but absolutely pray. Check out Stand With Warriors and look to support and pray for other organizations like Liberty Council and First Liberty Institute mm-hmm. as well. I would say they're the heavy hitters when it comes to being able to go in federal court. Stand With Warriors is more focused on training, education, rallying people, and then individual fights. So individual discharge boards and things like that. And if you know a military member, if you know someone in federal law enforcement that's dealing with discrimination and persecution because of their faith, whatever it is, send them to Stand With Warriors. Let us know about the story and we'll do what we can to help. Absolutely.
Great. Well, thank you so much for all this. This has been really informative and helpful for me as well.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Renaissance of Men podcast. Visit us on the web at renofmen.com or on your favorite social media platform at Ren of Men. This is the Renaissance of Men. You are the Renaissance.